from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll meet some Heron High School students who are exhibiting their artwork here at WFYI.
I'll get a preview of this year's Indiana Artisan Marketplace.
And I'll find out about an art collaboration involving some couches. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. On March 9th from 5 to 7 p.m., Heron High School art students will be exhibiting their work in WFYI's Rubin Community Room. Travis DiNicola sat down with some of the students to find out more.
Since we've got a lot of people here, I want to go around the room and introduce yourself. Give me your full name and what year you are in school. And Julian, we'll start with you.
Hello, I am Julian Harper, and I'm a senior.
Okay.
I'm Lexi McClure, and I'm a senior as well.
I'm Susanna Taft, and I'm a senior, too.
And I'm Rose Harding, and I'm also a senior.
Excellent. Great. And very nice to meet all of you today. I also want to invite your teacher, Lisa Sher Johnson, up to the microphone here. And, Lisa, we're going to have you start before we get into our interviews with the students. If you will, just briefly sort of tell us how this all came about. You're the art teacher over at the Heron High School, correct?
Actually, I'm one of four. Mm-hmm. So we have a really great art department. I'm just one of four. And my husband is on the board of WFYI, Eric Johnson, and he suggested that some of our students show their artwork. And he knows that I like to showcase student work whenever I can. And so he was kind of helping us out and getting the students kind of used to showing their work, because they will be, mm-hmm. a lot of them will be going to school, so just to get them to used to that. So I think it was a good way to kind of blend arts.
And this is a great opportunity for them in that normally the work would just be shown at the school, correct?
Yes. There's a couple shows. I think there's a show at the library that happens, but yes, mostly the work is shown at school.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, great. Well, thanks for bringing them all here today. And so let's hear from the artists. And we'll go back. Julian, we'll start with you. If you would, tell me a bit about the work that you've created for this upcoming exhibit.
Okay. Well, what I have submitted for this exhibit was a piece that I've done for my breath in a portfolio for one of my art classes in AP studio mm-hmm. class. And so we have to make portfolios, and there's a bread section where we show our variety and our mastery of the skills that we've learned.
Okay.
And so this piece is actually of Lexi's friend over here, and that she met, was it in Ukraine or?
Yeah.
It's a portrait of Lexi's friend, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's done in a way that the colors are skewed in it in a bit, and it's just a fun portrait, and it just.
So you were saying it shows up sort of breadth of different techniques that you've been learning. What's sort of the main technique here that you were focused on?
I think it's the mastery of the color, and I know that sounds kind of. Mm-hmm. Kind of simple, you know, like color, but there's like color theory, and like the idea is that certain colors work together, and then or that when you add certain colors, they work together or they fight against each other. And so in this piece I've made it so that they have unnatural colors on the skin, but yet it's not unappealing.
Okay. Yeah, I can certainly picture what you're describing. A lot of portraits that use sort of interesting shading of colors, like greens or blues, or where you think, you know, at first that doesn't necessarily work, you know, in terms of skin tone, but then you see it all come together, and it comes out very well. Very cool. Lexi, tell me about the piece that you've included.
I have included one of my 3D pieces. I'm a 3D artist, so it's of three really shallow bowls that are flipped upside down, and they have a cool, like, decorative pattern on top of each one. One is actually blank, though, and then the other ones kind of come together, and I used...
Are these ceramic bowls?
They're made out of clay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're, and they have neat glazes on them, and it's part of my breath as well as Julian's is, and it just, like, shows what I've learned on how to use clay and textures, and then what glazes, how glazes are fired and how they incorporate each other, so...
But you said they're upside down?
Yeah.
Okay, so these are non-functioning.
Right, they are non-functioning.
So why'd you choose to do that?
Just an interesting way to interpret, like, the instead of using just the natural way of a bowl, just to flip it upside down, and one is actually almost broken in half, and so it's just a neat, like, kind of skew on how you really use a natural bowl.
Do you see the pieces as one, or are they separate pieces?
They are all separate pieces, but they act as one, so, okay. Like, they go together.
Cool. Do you have a title for that?
I don't have a title yet, but okay. I'm thinking.
There's plenty of time.
Yes.
Okay, Susan, tell me about the piece that you've included.
I included a oil painting that I did last year as part of an independent project for a school. Mm-hmm. And basically, independent projects are, you can choose anything that you want to do, something that intrigues you. And the inspiration behind my painting is actually, I was on a college visit and I was on top of a beautiful mountain. And I was just walking around on top of the mountain, and I was watching the sunset, and there were these telephone wires. And out of all the pictures I had taken that weekend, when I was looking through, that one popped out to me. And I think it's interesting because I've grown up in an urban area, and mm-hmm. I was on top of this beautiful mountain, but the thing that popped out to me was that there were these telephone wires, and I called it interrupted beauty, but it's also sort of reminds me of my home. Even though I'm away on top of this mountain, there's something that reminds me.
So it's an oil painting, it's a landscape based on a photograph you took?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so, but it sounds like, I mean, the real focus of these telephone wires, even though it's a landscape and the sun in the distance, right?
Right, yeah.
Very cool. How, what's the size on this?
It's 10 by 10 okay. inches.
10 by 10 inches. And so now oil is pretty tricky to work with. Is that a medium that you use a lot?
Yeah, actually, I chose to use oil on this project because, I mean, it was my independent project. We don't teach oil painting at our school because of the fumes, and we don't have the right ventilation in the current building that we're in. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to do it on my own and just play around. So I didn't have anyone teaching me. So I kind of just learned through my mistakes, and it was actually really fun to play around with. So.
Now, have you continued to work in oil since then?
I have a little bit, but acrylic is just more convenient.
Sure, certainly. Rose, tell me about what you have in this.
I have a piece from a series that I'm working on for my concentration with school. We have to do these concentrations with our AP art classes mm-hmm. where we have to focus on a particular idea or subject and explore it and experiment with it as much as possible. And my concentration focuses on the relationship between humans and nature and industrialization in nature and just how they react to each other, specifically with nature taking back what humans have imposed upon it. So my piece is graphite, and it's very, it's a mixture of shapes, but it's at the same time realistic, so it's kind of confusing and ambiguous, which I really like because I think it brings an air of mystery to something that we haven't really seen before. We haven't really seen a lot of nature taking things back or nature taking over things in a way, like, I don't know, fungus on people, I guess.
I mean, it sounds like an abstracted piece, but are there recognizable forms or shapes in
this?
Or?
Yes, there are. Yes, but at the same time, like I said, it is kind of confusing. So.
Yeah, a good piece to have an artist statement to go along with, perhaps.
Yeah.
So is that, for this particular piece, is that, it sounds like part of a series of ideas that you've been working on?
Yes, yeah, it is. It's my fourth in the series, and like I said, it just explores different ideas, and you're meant to experiment as much as possible and just, risk things.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like a lot of great work that's going to be exhibited in this show. I want to remind our listeners that we're talking with some seniors from the Heron High School. And one of the great things about Heron High School, and it's located just across the street here from WFYI, is that it really isn't exactly an art school, though. I mean, and this is a school that focuses on, I've heard many times, about helping students learn to become arts audiences and arts patrons. And but yet, the four of you, it sounds like, have taken your work very seriously. Let's talk a bit about what sort of your future plans are, because here we are in your senior years, and I'm sure you're thinking about college or other future things. Julian, let's start with you.
Well, I have applied to BYU, and I've been accepted, and I hope to go on and do the graphic design program, actually, and I'm happy about that. And I've gotten a scholarship for submitting portfolio, and I'm just hoping to grow in that career. And so
definitely pursuing the arts. Good for you, Lexi. How about you?
I'm actually moving to Costa Rica for 7 months right after high school to do missions work, but after I get back from Costa Rica, I think I want to go to Columbia College in Chicago to study 3D art. So
excellent. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
And Susan?
Well, right now I'm trying to decide between Covenant College, which is in Georgia, and I've also been accepted to Savannah College of Art and Design. So I'm just waiting to hear back on scholarships.
Great school. But you've got a Harvard sweatshirt. And Rose?
I've been accepted at several different art schools, but I've decided on going to Indiana University because I feel they have a really wide breadth of studies that I could possibly do, as well as art, which I will pursue.
Excellent, excellent. Well, good luck with your studies, all of you. I want to invite your teacher back to the microphone, if you would. Lisa, as we wrap this up, I know that this exhibit that's opening this weekend actually goes through March 23rd. And if people want to get a chance to see the exhibit, how can they do that?
Yes, it does run through the 23rd, but it is on a schedule. And if they would like, if people want to see the exhibit, and I encourage them to do so, to email me, and that is ljohnson@heronhighschool.org. And so if they have any questions about the exhibit or if they want to know the schedule, they can email me and I will get back to them.
Travis DiNicola with Heron High School art teacher Lisa Cher Johnson and seniors Julian Harper, Rose Harding, Susanna Taft, and Lexi McClure. The exhibit is on display through March 23rd. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Looking for an unusual gift or need a treat for yourself as winter turns to spring? You can find one-of-a-kind Indiana art and artisan food and wine at the second annual Indiana Artisan Marketplace, March 31st through April 1st at the Expo Hall at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. Sharon Gamble recently spoke with artist Peg Neal and Indiana Artisan staff member Roslyn Demarie about the marketplace. Warning: you may get hungry.
So, ladies, either of you, or maybe both of you, tell me why the Indiana artisan movement has gotten so strong. I mean, this has been going on for a few years, but now it seems to be taking over the world. What are you doing to take over the world? What's your campaign secret, Peg?
We got some talented people.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And I think the whole push for buy local is really sinking in. But since, well, the inception was in 2008, mm-hmm. and last year was our first real big push to introduce artisans, and it was an overwhelming success. I think people were introduced to the artisan program, and it really was branded at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't beat good talent.
That's right. How are you defining artisan? What are the parameters?
Anything that is handmade, basically, or created. And we have two categories: the food folks, which includes wine, all kinds of sauces, syrups, cheeses, breads, cookies. So there's, you know, that runs the gamut. And then in the on the art side, we have all media identified there.
And there's a an older, well-established program. It's a bluegrass artisans program, right? That this is loosely modeled on?
We were loosely modeled on the Kentucky program, which is very much like ours, mm-hmm. and they were so generous in sharing their total program, mm-hmm. from the juring process, the products, to the actual show like we had last year, Marketplace. Mm-hmm. So.
How do you go about jurying?
There is an application on our website, IndianaArtisans.org, and you fill out the form, submit your work, and then at the time of the actual jurying, you bring in your actual products, and they are juried in by a
non-partial jury.
Yes, yeah. Roz, you were involved with that last year, weren't you?
We have a panel of 6 to 7 people who jury the visual arts, and then for the food jury, we actually have 2 panels, one that just goes over packaging and labeling and things like that, and then another one that does tasting. And if you bring in 14 flavors of flavored vinegar, every one of those flavors will get tested.
Wow.
Will get tasted and considered individually.
Wow.
It's very, it's a very stringent, very good process. We take about 20% of the people who actually make it in. But
yeah.
We have 194 artisans in it now from 54 counties, so we are very well represented in the state.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of 154 sounds like a lot, but obviously a lot more are applying. So do we have a sense statewide of what the census of people who would consider themselves artisans might be? I mean, how do you even count?
I don't know that you could count that, especially since now artisan has become a buzzword.
Yeah.
And you can buy manufactured products that are artisan made.
Arties and all,
So you have to be a little careful about that. Ours are all truly artisan products.
Which generally means no mass production, no outsourcing.
Right.
Correct.
So if I'm a creator of jewelry, I probably don't have a warehouse full of 20 people subcontracted to me.
No, absolutely.
I'm doing it myself. Yes. Yeah. So it's kind of like the locavore movement, but we need to coin a word, the loca consumed movement or something like that to cover not just the food but the visual art. So how do you account for the explosion of interest? What are you hearing from people around the state? Is it kind of like it was from the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, where people had just had enough of mass production and wanted to go back to something more personal?
I think it has to do with the whole economic thing. So many things are made somewhere else, and I think people are gravitating back,
mm-hmm.
and recognizing this is handmade, it is not mass-produced. And that's my take on it.
I think that's true. I think the whole Made in USA movement has something to do with it, too, because this is not just made in USA. This is made in small town Indiana.
In your backyard, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. The Vicki Graber who weaves willow baskets goes to her backyard to pick the willow.
Cool.
She learned how to do it from her father and grandfather, and she makes
Aww.
Beautiful baskets. They are completely functional, but they are beautiful works of art on their own as well. And that's true of a lot of the
Absolutely.
Of a lot of the artisans.
What are some of the other stories like that, where maybe a craft is being passed along, an art is being passed along?
Roz would know more about that than I.
And I'm trying to think of some.
That's okay. Take your time. Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No,
there.
That's fine.
The folks that do the sauces, the maple stirrup, all of this comes from their land, the products. I'm trying to think of other I'm trying to think of the art side, and I can't really think of anyone like that. But
I can think of one, and this man's not going to be at Marketplace, but he creates snake sticks.
And what's this, that?
Well, it started, it's his own little thing. He started when, he didn't start the art, but when he and his dad used to walk in the woods all the time. And his dad would always say, sticks or stones? And this guy would always go after the sticks. He wanted the sticks. Well, he discovered after many, many walks in the woods that he could see snakes in some of the sticks. And he took them home and started collecting them. And it's a tradition in his family that all Christmas presents are made. And one year he didn't know what he was going to make. So he said, okay, I've had all these snakes or sticks. I'm going to figure out what to make with them. So he started painting them and putting little things on them that he recycles and things. And he makes beautiful snake sticks is what they're called. And they're in the shape of a snake, and they have all this beautiful art on them, painted on them. They're very, very cool. He isn't participating in Marketplace because he does such a small number of them. He doesn't think he can provide for the crowd.
And that's one thing I'm curious about. Last year, did you have very many of your participants run out of things?
Actually, we did.
Yeah.
In fact, someone from... We also, in our show, we invite the artist and food folks from Kentucky who are in Kentucky Crafted and Proud.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I noticed on one of the surveys that someone had to go back to Lexington that one evening.
And bring more?
Yes. And we had several that did.
Well, that's good incentive for people to go on Saturday early.
Yes.
Since it's a two-day marketplace.
Yes.
I want to emphasize that while we're talking about the Indiana Artisan Marketplace, which is coming up on March 31st and April 1st at the Indiana State Fairgrounds in Expo Hall, that the Artisan program is year-round. It's a collaborative effort across the state, and I know just enough to be dangerous about it, but can you tell us a little bit more about what some of the other programs are that go on year-round?
The program is really just now getting on its feet. We have a new headquarters in Alexandria, which is going to be selling products online.
Oh, yay.
There are goals to have perhaps stores of just Indiana products, stores within stores. So this is where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was under the auspices of the state its first 2 years, yes. And last year it became an independent organization. So it's really feeling its way and evolving right now, and evolving very fast,
sure,
I think.
Sure. Is there a national service organization for state artisan programs yet?
Well, when
you get bored, y'all can start one of those.
There aren't very many state artisan programs.
Really?
Yeah. Indiana is very fortunate
to have
one. I love
that we're pioneers. That's so cool. Peg, in addition to your role in getting this marketplace up and on its feet, you are a hands-on artist. Do you have time to make things to be in?
I have found I'm probably going to, I told someone the other day I was just going to put a little stage in my booth and stand there and sing this year. No, it has taken an amazing amount of time that I was totally.
Didn't know you had, huh?
Didn't know I had, and then when I'm not doing something, then I'm worrying about it, so.
Sure.
But it's gone amazingly smooth, and such fine people on my committee.
Now I know we don't begin to have enough time to mention all of the products and creators who will be involved. But you're going to take your own recycle bag and walk out of that place each day with something. What will be in your bag? What are you looking forward to taking home?
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the virtues of being an artist is that we always get to trade things, and I've got a wonderful collection of art.
Smart girl.
Last year, I walked out with two paintings, one by Terry Barnett and another by Susan Klein, who is an artist in Peru and absolutely really hits my whimsy side big time. And Terry's, I love her starkness and design. So that's, I will be looking for 2D work and people that want to trade with me.
Roz, art, food, both?
I'd probably walk out with both. There's a wood carver who's new to the program named Larry Green, who makes very whimsical little carved people that I really like. I'd like something of his. Peg makes beautiful pottery. She was telling me about some of her teapots before the show, and I would love to have buy a teapot from her. Our maple syrup man now makes rum-infused maple syrup that is to die for.
Can we just drink that? Do we have to put it on pancakes?
It is a must-stop at booth for a sample at least.
Sharon Gamble with artist Peg Neal and Indiana artisan staff member Rosalind Demery. More than 125 artisans from Indiana and an additional 75 artisans from Kentucky will showcase art and food during the Indiana Artisan Marketplace March 31st through April 1st at the Expo Hall at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. Food and art jury panels select each artisan, including painters, beekeepers, woodworkers, winemakers, jewelry designers, weavers, makers of specialty cheeses, and more. In addition to browsing the booths, visitors will enjoy Indiana music, live art and craft demonstrations, and food and drink tasting. Admission is $10, and children 7 and under are free. Learn more at indianaartisan.org. Again, indianaartisan.org. Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
I hear you have a new job.
I do.
But it's not going to keep you from doing that calendar that we call
What Will We Do? Not in the least.
Good, good, good. Hey, so congratulations. You've been at the Phoenix Theater for many, many years. And
oh,
now,
you make me sound so old.
Oh, no. And doing a great job.
Working in the arts keeps you young.
Yes, it does. But tell me about this big change.
I just started this week at Indiana Landmarks, the statewide historic preservation organization whose slogan is Saving Meaningful Places. And it's an organization I've volunteered for over the years, and longtime listeners know that we both have old houses.
That's
and
right.
Have had many renovation adventures in our lives.
It's a different type of theater for you.
That's a great segue. I'll bet you have some lively performing arts events to share with us on the calendar.
I do, but I'm very excited for you and your new job, and that's fantastic for Indiana Landmarks. And
It is, and I'm still very much, very fond of the Phoenix Theater, but the great news is our listeners may have noticed that you don't do interviews about the place where your day job is.
That's
and
right.
Nor do I. Mm-hmm. So you may hear me doing interviews about the Phoenix Theater now since I'm no longer staff. That's right.
Very cool. Yeah, in fact, and this is the final weekend for August, Osage County,
it
the Phoenix
is
Theater.
Fantastic, big, sprawling comedy, family drama, family comedy drama. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
all
the right
together.
Order for the words. Yeah, kind of like a very funny long day's journey into night.
Yeah,
it will make your family seem so normal. I'm just saying that.
So some great stuff going on there.
Yes.
And of course we've got lots of other stuff. I want to mention, in fact, this weekend at Cabaret at the Columbia Club on Sunday, 6 p.m. a special evening of cabaret with Shannon Forsell and Brenda Williams.
Wow.
And the proceeds benefit Broadway Presents and the music program at Broadway United Methodist Church. This should be a ton of fun with Shannon and Brenda together again at Cabaret at the Columbia Club Sunday
night. Two amazing voices and great personalities. You can't miss with that. Hey, speaking of singing, on March 15th, the Impalas will bring the 60s, 70s, and Motown to the Indiana History Center. And it's a 10-piece musical band described as infectious and unforgettable, soulful, rocking, and jubilant. And you can get more information about the Impalas at the-impalas.com. But that event is at the Indiana History Center, and it's kind of a package deal, $60 per person, or $50 if you're a Historical Society member. And it's on March 15th, it's a 7 to 10 o'clock evening, including dinner, a cash bar, and dancing to the Impalas. So good opportunity to go out and dance up a little enthusiasm for the upcoming spring.
Sounds like a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, some theater going on this weekend and next. Theater Non Nobis is presenting the Indianapolis premiere of The Story of My Life, and it is featuring Tim Spradlin. And this play is about two boys turning into men and taking on that journey of laughter and awkwardness and loss and joy. And it is taking place at the Theater Non Nobis Church Within Theater. That's located down in historic Fountain Square. And it runs this weekend and next.
Excellent. Hey, this isn't strictly an arts thing, but make sure you're not late to an arts event on Sunday because you forgot to change your clocks Saturday night.
Sure.
That's right. It's a daylight saving time is back.
Thank you for that reminder.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like a lot of fun. It's if you're listening to us Friday night, you can still check this out tomorrow on Saturday. If you're listening to us Saturday, well, you can maybe still get there because it goes until 5 at Book Mama's in Irvington, that great little used bookstore right across from Lazy Days Cafe. And they are having a Welcome to the Monkey House Day. This is dealing with the Kurt Vonnegut book, Welcome to the Monkey House.
I was hoping Kurt Vonnegut was part of this.
Yeah, and it includes that they are going to be serving monkey bread in the morning and Slaughterhouse 5 pizza in the afternoon, and readings will take place throughout the day, and a percentage of the sales throughout the day benefit the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library.
And if you make a really big donation, they'll serve you up some monkey brains.
Ooh.
Ooh. Hey, remember our friend Eric Grayson has put together a series at Garfield Park called Fallen Stars. It's a movie series featuring films that in turn feature stars who got into some kind of trouble. On March 24th at 7 o'clock, Lionel Atwill, he was a top British actor, and he was in lead or top supporting parts through the 1930s. But he had a reputation for holding wild parties, and one of them got very out of hand in 1942. Atwill was arrested and was shunned by mainstream Hollywood. No, I'm intrigued. I wish I could get in the Wayback Machine and go. The film on March 24th at 7 is one of his earliest starring roles, The Vampire Bat, with, get this, these are stars you're more likely to have heard of, Faye Ray and Melvin Douglas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so check that out. Tickets are just $3.
That
so
sounds like a hoot.
You can see an out of the ordinary film and realize that TMZ wasn't around in the 20s or 30s, but people were still fond of following juicy stories about stars who get in trouble.
There you go. Hey, I've got a great idea. If you've got some young musicians who are also big fans of astronomy in your household, next week take them to see Holds the Planets at the ISO.
Love
I'm excited. Going to see that next weekend myself, in fact. It should be a great concert. The Planets is the main performance, and also ISO Concertmaster Zach DePew is going to be performing a solo piece as well that evening. Should be a lot of fun next Friday and Saturday at the Symphony Orchestra.
Excellent. Hey, Travis, over there on the table in our production studio, see that little yellow ear? Would you hand that to me?
Sure. Here it is.
Because Mr. Potato Head has only one ear right now.
I wonder where that
came
from.
We have to put him back together. So if you have really young children in your universe, or you just are a geek about Mr. Potato Head, maybe you had some good times putting Mr. Potato Head's features on in a strange way. That's it. Next year at Winefest, we'll have a Mr. Potato Head activity. Anyway, Mr. Potato Head is going to lead young visitors and their parents or guardians or bigger siblings on a number of fun and educational adventures where, of course, at the Children's Museum. But you can do everything from outer space trips to jungle safaris and archaeological digs under the guidance of Mr. Potato Head.
Just be aware he doesn't have a pipe anymore. They stopped making that back in the 80s, I believe.
Politically incorrect,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Poor Mr. Potato Head. Hey,
is that what that is on the floor? It's his pipe. Yeah. Okay.
Next weekend is, of course, St. Patty's Day.
Woo!
Just a reminder that the 31st annual St. Patrick's Day Parade takes place on Friday, not on Saturday. It takes place starting at 11:30 on Friday, March 16th. It should be a ton of fun. There are also lots and lots of events, of course, at many Irish-related or Irish-themed places, such as Clodagh and Massif Wine Shop and the Rathskeller and gosh, about anywhere else you can think of up and down Mass Avenue next weekend. It should be a lot of fun, as well as other places downtown. But if you're looking for something a little bit more artistic, perhaps, the Voices of Youth concert is taking place at the Hilbert Circle Theater on Sunday the 18th at both 3 and 7 p.m., and it is featuring Indy's premier Irish band, the Irish Airs, along with the Indianapolis Children's Choir. Should be a lot of fun and a beautiful concert as well.
And if you haven't gotten enough Irish music by the end of the month, you can join the Indianapolis Cayley Band and Friends of the Downtown Knights of Columbus, which is at 13th and Delaware, for the annual Spring Cayley Concert of Traditional Irish Music, Dance, Drinks, and Family Fund. Irish Dancers of Indianapolis, Mac Bellner from Hogeye Navy, Irish Blessers Dancers, and so, so much more. You can find out more at IndieCayleyBand.com, and Cayley is C-E-I-L-I. So that's going on again at the end of the month. So if you miss out and you sleep your way through St. Patrick's Day, you can still get your Irish on March 31st.
There you go. Hey, he probably won't be singing Danny Boy for this concert. You never know, though. But Stephen Stolen is performing a Coward Cabaret next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 16th, 17th, and I'm sorry, also on March 24th, the Saturday. And these three performances with Stephen Stolen, he will be singing a whole bunch of music by Noel Coward, and this should be a lot of fun. It will also feature a special appearance from Shannon Forsell as well.
She's everywhere,
and this should be a great concert at the IRT. Join them for some beautiful music from the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Wow, and you know what? Maybe for an encore, you could get him to do. He does a beautiful version of Danny Boy.
I wouldn't be surprised if he does one on the 17th.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, here is a road trip. It's a nice combination of an Irish celebration and, you know, warm weather makes you want to get out and get on the road a little bit. Madison, Indiana. In the mid-1800s, hundreds of Irish laborers came to Madison to construct the railroad incline, and Madison is celebrating its Irish roots with St. Patrick's Day Eve event. It's a St. Patty's party downtown, and in fact, events throughout the weekend. There are specials at restaurants in Madison. There are traditional Irish sports, etc., etc., etc. So check that out. Just Google Madison, Indiana, St. Patrick's celebration.
Very good. Well, Sharon, we will be back with more ideas for celebrating the arts and St. Patty's Day and who knows what else.
That's right.
Next week on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Sometimes a couch is just a piece of furniture, and sometimes it becomes art. Couched Constructions is a new exhibit at Heron School of Art and Design, and Couched Constructions Part 2 is the sister exhibit at the Arthur M. Glick Jewish Community Center. Travis DiNicola spoke with Larry Rothenberg, the Director of Arts and Education for the JCC, about the show.
I got a little tired as I was preparing for this interview. I just kind of wanted to take a nap on a couch. You ever have that feeling yourself as you've been working on this?
Well, we've certainly got a lot of couches, but not really to sleep on.
This is a really interesting partnership and collaboration with a number of organizations and artists, and we're going to talk about sort of how it all came about, but I want to sort of get my mind around, there's two really main separate elements here. Mm-hmm. And one of them is the actual exhibit called Couch Constructions, which is now on exhibit at the Heron School of Art and Design. And tell me just a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about what's going on with the JCC.
Yes, this is just a wonderful exhibit, curated by both Paula Katz, who's the director of the gallery at the Heron School of Arts and Design, and Wes Jantz, who is a professor of architecture at Ball State University, and an artist and really a visionary. And the idea is that, you know, we see couches all the time, and then when we're done with them, we throw them out, and we think they go away. We think everything goes away.
Nothing ever goes away.
So what Wes and a group of 10 artist groups all together decided that they were going to create an exhibit based on found couches, the things that you find at the side of the street.
When people are cleaning out and they toss a couch on the side of the road or in front of their house and expect the garbage to pick it up.
Exactly. And so they have created an exhibit which is both at the Heron School of Art and Design, and then we have what we call a satellite exhibit, the same basic exhibit, but of course different things.
Okay.
That shows us what couches are about, the artwork inside of a couch, what can be created out of couches when you strip them and actually look at their skeletons, the social activities that exist around couches.
Yeah.
It's just a whole different concept.
Because it really is such a central piece of an American home. I mean, mm-hmm. the couches, I mean, that's a big deal when someone is, you know, buying your first home or even getting your first apartment and getting that, whether, you know, it's a futon or an actual couch or you get a hand-me-down couch, it's often sort of the centerpiece of furniture that people gather around.
And once we buy them, we usually don't even think about them.
Yeah.
And there's so much to a couch. And once again, once we get rid of it, we think it disappears, and nothing disappears. That's what's so amazing.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. Nothing disappears. And especially, I mean, couches have, you know, it's not just fabric or leather. It's the springs. It's the metal. It's the wood frame. I mean, you mentioned the skeleton. You know, as soon as you said that, I have this vision of a couch sort of exploding. Not that I've ever had, like, one that like that in my apartment before when I was younger, but still, you get the idea.
But you can see things similar to that in both of the art exhibits, both ours at the JCC and the one at Heron.
So now with the JCC, so you've got an exhibit, and this is at the JCC, it's Couch Constructions Part 2.
Exactly.
And so you've got an exhibit of artwork of couches created by the artists who are involved with the whole process, but you've also connected it to a larger program that the JCC's had going on and continues to have going on, correct?
Well, several programs. We kind of, starting with the discussion with Wes and Paula, we developed a three-part program in March that we call Repurposing the Stuff of Life.
Okay.
Carrying the idea that started with couches to people, to neighborhoods, and so forth. And we included some of our other partners. For example, we work with Heartland Truly Moving Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually going to have five partnerships with them this year. And one of the things that just works beautifully is on March 12th,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be showing a film called Wasteland.
Right, yeah, I saw that. That's a great partnership with Heartland.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're very happy to be with them.
And this is a documentary about garbage pickers in Rio, is that right?
Yeah, it's an amazing documentary. It starts with a very well-known New York artist named Vic Muñiz,
mm-hmm.
and it actually starts with him calling his wife and saying, guess what? I'm moving back to my home in Brazil for a year, and I'm going to live in the largest garbage dump in the world. And, of course, her response was a little bit surprised. He moves there. He lives in the garbage dump. He gets to know the people, once again, that most of us choose to ignore.
Yeah.
The culture that exists, I mean, it takes a whole city to make this garbage dump, quote-unquote, work. He gets to know their aspirations, their backgrounds, their dreams, and with them, he creates world-class art out of the trash that is in the dump.
I can't even imagine how big this dump must be.
It's like a city.
And wow.
And the people there have dignity, they have lives, and they become part of this artistic process. And it's a very moving and thoughtful film that once again ties in with the idea that, you know, what we throw away is not thrown away, including the people that we choose to ignore.
Right.
Because most of these people, most people don't want to think about them or wouldn't want to talk to them.
But you can't throw them away either. And Wasteland, the movie, the screening of this, is at the JCC Monday, the 12th, at 7 o'clock, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And it's, you know, it's $5. It's $3 for JCC members. And something that's really fun is, and we often do this with Heartland, after the movie, we will be Skyping with the executive producer of the movie and several of the principal characters in the movie Brazil.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now, you've got another event tied into this, and this is part of the Indie Talks series, which has just been a great series of moderated panel discussions. And this one is coming up on Wednesday, March 28th, from 7 to 9 p.m. The title is Our City Under the Radar, Neighborhoods on the Edge. Tell me more about this.
Yes. Well, Indie Talks, of course, is a great organization composed of, you know, 20 different groups and more. It's growing constantly, WFYI being one of them.
Yes.
And, you know, it's dedicated to fostering a sense of community through respectful and creative dialogue. And this year, the unifying theme is Indie at the Crossroads. So as we were thinking of what we would like to do, we kind of tied it in with the discussion we had with Wes,
mm-hmm.
and we decided that we came up with the topic, Our City Under the Radar, Neighborhoods on the Edge, starting with the idea that, you know, there are an estimated 10 to 12,000 abandoned homes and properties in Indianapolis.
Yeah, this is a stunning figure.
Absolutely. And there are also neighborhoods where a large percent of the people live in houses where they're upside down on their mortgage and mm-hmm. don't know what the future holds for them. Well, the way that our city deals with these neighborhoods is going to have a lot to do with the future of our city.
Mm-hmm.
And we came to realize that when we're talking about our city, we're not just talking about the government, because there are neighborhood leaders, there are community leaders, thank goodness, throughout our city
mm-hmm.
that are building neighborhoods and being creative and developing communities. So we have brought many of them together for this Indie Talks.
It's a great
program list.
I mean, I know that this is still a preliminary list and people may be added, but you've got Erica Smith from The Star, the mm-hmm. columnist from The Star, who's going to be your moderator. But you've got a great lineup of people who are participating. Of course, Wes Janz, you mentioned, who's the professor of architecture from Ball State, who really is the person who got this whole couch constructions mm-hmm. rolling. But then tell me a bit about some of the other people who are going to be a part of this.
Well, there's actually going to be two parts of this. The first part is where there's going to be a panel discussion and question and answer. And
okay.
as you said, Erica Smith will be moderating it. Wes will be part of that panel.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Hageman, mm-hmm. the chairman of the Land Bank of Indianapolis, will
be part.
Right,
and the former executive director of Partners in Housing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Michael Huber, who is the deputy mayor for the city of Indianapolis, in charge of economic development, will be part of the panel. And Connie Ziegler, who's president of Community Resources, an architectural historian, and the chairperson of Southeast Neighborhoods Alternative to Demolitions Task Force.
Right. Connie has probably been the most vocal and I think well-informed and well-reasoned person who's really been trying to make sure that houses don't get demolished, that they get repurposed or rebuilt or what have you. But,
exactly.
She's really been leading that effort.
Mm-hmm.
That's great to have her involved as well.
Absolutely. So these people will be on the panel,
mm-hmm.
but then part of the what we will be doing for the second half is breaking down into discussion groups.
There will
be large tables. Everybody will be seated around the tables. And each table will have a monitor or a moderator.
Sure.
And the moderators also are people who are very, very involved in developing community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like Dave Andrichik, the owner of the Chatterbox,
mm-hmm.
and a community activist who's been just essential in building community. Ann Laker, who's very involved. Well, actually, she's the assistant director of public programming for IMA, and she's involved with Big Car.
Right.
We'll have
one of the first people I know who talked about having a greenhouse.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned Big Car. You got also Jim Walker and Chate Marsh from there as well.
Mm-hmm. Will Marquez, who is very involved in developing communities. He's an architect. Owns his own business,
mm-hmm.
and just a brilliant thinker. Olin Dotson, who is the associate professor of architecture at Ball State University. Tim Irwin from Heartland Film.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got people kind of approaching this from all different angles. And about a week ago, we had a great planning group with all these people, because this is not something that's just put together, for instance, by me. It's put together by everybody that's involved in it. And it's an evolving program. We're not even sure, you know, who knows how it's going to end up, because it's a community discussion.
This is really interesting, the way that this one sort of idea of couches has turned into a multiple exhibits plus events going on. And again, I just want to remind people that the Indie Talks event is on March 28th. That's a Wednesday from 7 to 9 at the JCC. Part of this has all been made possible through the Ephraimson Fund, correct? And Jeremy Ephraimson?
Yes, the Ephraimson Fund has been absolutely crucial in supporting the Couch Constructions programming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and you know, it's a big show, and we're very thankful that we have that support, and we're also very thankful for our partners, you know, to be working with Heron.
Sure.
Because there's just things that we never would have seen or thought about if it wasn't for them.
So Larry, are you looking at your couch a little bit differently now?
You know, by the time I get home, I just sit on. I hate to say, I don't think I've learned.
I totally understand.
I just fall down on it.
Now, there's also, with this, I believe, is there a connection to Earth Day? Is that right?
Yes, yes. I'm very glad you mentioned that. We are having our inaugural Earth Day at the JCC on April 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course,
it's a Sunday.
Mm-hmm. The Couch Constructions Program will still be open, and it kind of ties in beautifully with it. And the Earth Day is really kind of a lot of fun. It's free and open to the public, as everything that we're talking about is free, except for the film, which is very inexpensive. And it concentrates, it's family-friendly, it concentrates on learning by doing. We'll have a solar racing car team from Purdue.
Oh, cool.
We'll have the Eco Car from Rose Holman. Mm-hmm. We'll have Walk in the Woods with Naturalists from Indy Parks and Ivy Tech Botany Department. We'll have recycling, food trucks. Over 20 partners will be represented there. And it's just a great thing. It's from 11:30 till 2:30.
On the 22nd of April. Mm-hmm. That'll be great. And Larry, again, this is all taking place up at the JCC, up on Hoover Road, 6701 Hoover Road.
Exactly.
Yeah, you guys have so many interesting programs that go on up there.
We're very fortunate to, just be able to do what works well for us. And what works well for us, we keep looking out into the community and see how we can tie things together.
Travis DiNicola with Larry Rothenberg, the Director of Arts and Education for the JCC. The exhibit Couched Constructions Part 2 runs through May 4th at the JCC. The public's invited to a reception on Wednesday, March 21st from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. for complimentary refreshments and the opportunity to meet the artists at the JCC Art Gallery. The Arthur M. Glick Jewish Community Center is located at 6701 Hoover Road on the north side of Indianapolis. The exhibit Couch Constructions is on display at the Heron School of Art on the IUPUI campus through April 19th, and you can find out a lot more by searching online for Couched Constructions Indianapolis. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I'll chat with poet Liza Hyatt about her new collection.
I'll get a preview of Steel Ponies roaring into the Idol Jorg.
Get your motor running. And I'll take a look at the upcoming Music for All Festival. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.